Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for CEO Exclusive, brought to you by Annona Enterprises.
We're really excited, broadcasting live from the Vistage Executive Summit here in Atlanta. And with us, we have Chuck Reeves of Sales Suites. Chuck is a speaker in the Speaker Hall of Fame. He's a legend here in the Vistage community. And Chuck, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about selling and how you see leading with 2020 vision over the next 5 years.
Your topic could not be more timely and more appropriate. There's been more change in the world of sales in the last few months than there has been in the last 20 years. Tectonic changes are happening in the way we go to market. There are three primary drivers that are changing sales. The first is demographics. The demographics are changing. They're shifting the way people think, the way people act, the way people buy. The second is process. We're seeing now some of the better business processes coming over to the sales side of the house. And the third is technology. Technology is being used now in sales more than ever before. So when we look at the changes that are happening in sales, they're happening faster, and they are more significant. The impact of those changes is just incredible. For too long, sales was the corporate stepchild. We had all of the other people in the organization, and then we had the salespeople. We treated them differently. We paid them differently. A salesperson would close a sale, we'd ring the bell, high five, go out to lunch. They don't do that in accounting. You'll never go down to the accounting department and see people standing around a desk. Good ledger, good ledger. They don't. It's only in sales where that happens. All of that is changing. All of it.
So let's maybe take these one by one. So talk to us about demographics. What are the specific demographic changes that you're seeing, and how are they affecting businesses, and how are they affecting sales specifically?
Okay, good question. Obviously an area where you have expertise. So let's start drilling down. We look at the different demographics, and everyone who speaks on demographics uses a different scale. I use five demographics with one emerging demographic. The five that I use are historians, which would include Warren Buffett, people who were in business post-World War II, boomers, which is my generation, busters or Gen Y, the people right behind us, the Gen Xers, and then the millennials. And they're becoming the conundrum of pretty much everybody in business right now. And
who
that's about
busters?
To change.
I've never heard of the busters. Who are they? What years are they?
Generation Y, generally speaking, the generation right behind us. What's interesting about them, they were for too long referred to as the silent generation because us boomers were taking all the air out of the room. An example of a buster who's broken the rule of silence would be Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Michael Dell. And some of those people are emerging. The primary difference in their behavior is they have the same business ethic, the same work ethic that we do, that my generation does. But they balance it better with their home life. They understand what it was like. Dad was gone 80 hours a week, and when he came home, he was in a bad mood. So they're still putting in the work. They're still making things happen, but they do take better care of their family. The emerging generation, the one that's about to come in, because by 2020, our theme for today, by 2020, the historians will pretty much be gone. We won't see a lot of them. There are very few of them now anyway. My generation will go to the top of the pyramid. So this emerging generation, we're keeping a close eye on, officially in February, titled Generation Z. An age bracket, there really isn't an age bracket, but consider them sort of high school, junior to college, sophomore, sort of in that band. They are proving to be the most successful, the most impactful generation of our history. They are incredible people. We look at them, there's a young girl, obviously she's young, in that generation who had a pen pal. Remember pen pals used to write letters back in the old days? She had a pen pal, has a pen pal, in the Philippines. And in the winter, her friend couldn't write very often because it got dark early and she didn't have lights. This high school kid invented a flashlight that runs off of body heat. we look at this generation, for the young boys, the hottest trend for them right now is bow ties that you tie yourself. I can't tie a bow tie. When I wear my tux, I buckle it in the back and off we go. Because they want to be different. Now, what drove that? Every generation wants to improve on the generation before. The pendulum swings as far as it can to the right, then it has to go to the left. So let's put those two together. This generation said, we want to make our own fashion statement. So we look at the millennials. How do the millennial boys dress? They wear blue jeans with holes in them. They buckle them around their thighs. I don't know how they keep them up, but somehow they do that. So this generation said, we're going to go the other direction. We're going to wear ties. But granddaddy wears a necktie, so we're going to wear a bow tie that we tie ourselves. So we look at this generation. We're finding now that the millennials will happily work for a Generation Z. We're going to see a step over on the corporate ladder. Generation Z is going to go ahead of the millennials, and the millennials are okay with that. No authority, no accountability, no responsibility, which is a hallmark of the millennial generation. So when we talk about millennials, we look at them and say, okay, I'm trying to understand how they think because thoughts always precede actions. I can't control their actions. I can control their thoughts or influence their thoughts. So now you look at your sales force. What is your sales force comprised of? That's no longer determined by the available talent in the talent pool or in the marketplace. It's determined by the customer. Who is my target account? If I'm going to be calling on millennials, most of the buyers in my target accounts are millennials. Don't pick me to do the sales call. I can't do it. So you go down on the demographics and you find maybe a Generation Z, or maybe you find a Gen Xer would be even better. The Gen Xer understands the silent generation, and they also understand the millennials, so that's who you would hire as a salesperson. If you want to penetrate an account or saturate an account, which is what I teach, don't hire a millennial because they don't know how to do that. It's not within their realm of understanding to be able to go into a CEO's office. A millennial will apply for a job and bring their cat with them. They think that's okay. Well, if you take your cat with you on a sales call, the customer's probably not going to be impressed.
Unless they're also a millennial, right?
If they're a millennial, you're just fine. But you have to look at your target accounts. Look at your target market, first of all, and then sort out which accounts within that market you want to go after. And then look at, okay, who is the person in those target accounts that I want to be selling to?
Now, you also mentioned another important factor is technology.
Oh, my gosh. Technology is becoming so much fun. It is absolutely amazing what's happening in technology for salespeople. Any significant company that's not using a CRM, a client relationship management program, is already losing. CRMs are obsolete. Every CRM out there has capabilities you'll never use, and it lacks a key capability that you need. That's just the nature of CRMs. Well, they're being supplanted now by something called a CRD, a client relationship driver, and I can't talk about it because I'm under an NDA. That's about as far as I can go with it, except to say, CRMs are reactive. Garbage in, garbage out. Input in, output out. CRDs are proactive. So now you can wake up in the morning and your computer will tell you who to call on, and it's someone who's not even in your database.
Wow.
It's someone who has never heard of you. It's a phenomenal world. Other things that are happening. Today you and I can go into a big box store. Now, you're too beautiful to do this, but guys like me would do it. We go into the big box store. We look at tires. We look at paint. We buy a shirt. We check out without engaging a human. No big deal, right?
Yeah, no, I like the self-checkout.
Yeah,
especially when I want to talk to somebody at the end of a long day.
What's different now is when I get out in the parking lot, my phone will vibrate. And it will say, Chuck. It will call me by name. Hope you enjoy your shirt. You know, we have a liberal return policy. For any reason, if it's not right, let me know. I see that you looked at tires and didn't buy. Here's a coupon. My generation looks at that and says, creepy. the millennials look at it and say,
thank you.
Cool, thank you. This is great. So we look at technologies that are coming like that. When a person says to me, you can't replace the face-to-face, they're 40% right. 40% of the buyers still would like a face-to-face. Guess who they are? People like me. The millennials would rather not have a face-to-face. If we're going to do a face-to-face, why don't we do it with technology, FaceTime or Skyping? Let's find some other way of being face-to-face. Everything about that seems to work. You get the verbal and visual interaction. It's much less expensive. There's no plane ticket. There's no hotel night. Why don't we start looking at which technologies, you ready for this, are appropriate for the customer? Not the field, not the market, not for those people who buy our stuff, for the individual account. My daughter sent me a text one time, and I don't text with my daughter. You want to talk to your dad? Pick up the phone. That's why the telephone was invented. We're going to talk. I'm old-fashioned. But she sent me a text with such a startling message in it, I picked up the phone and called her. I don't text with her. I'll text with other people, but I want to have conversation with some people. My grandchildren, 2 years old and 5 years old, all they know is technology. My granddaughter could drive an iPad before she could walk and before she could speak. So if I'm going to be selling to that generation in whatever it is, 18, 20 years, whenever she's in the marketplace, I need to sell based on the way she wants to be sold to.
And what was the third thing?
The third one was process. When we look at the processes that have reinvented or revolutionized or evolutionized industry, we look at, pick one, Six Sigma, ISO, Lean. Lean manufacturing, sometimes known as Kaizen. You can go into a manufacturing facility, use Kaizen, move from batch and queue to cells. You can reduce your production time. You can reduce your production cost. You can reduce your inventory. Save all kinds of money. So they do Kaizen events in manufacturing, engineering, finance, but not sales. And the scenario works out like this. Acme Widgets needs 5 days to produce and deliver their product. And in order to make full margin, they need to sell it for $100. So there's the business model, $100, 5 days. What are the Acme Widget salespeople promising their customers? 90 days and four, because the easiest way to sell is on price and delivery. So Acme goes through a Kaizen event. They cut 1 day out of their cycle time. They cut $10 off of their cost. They can now sell full margin and deliver in 4 days at $90. What are the Acme Widget salespeople now promising their customers?
3 days and $80.
So we weren't getting the benefit on the other side of the table. And one of the reasons was the way the Kaizen process works is different in sales than it is in manufacturing. There's just enough difference where the old models don't work. So we teach a process where you can go in and actually Kaizen your sales process. The mantra is very simple. Better, faster, lower cost. Better, faster, lower cost. My next sales call needs to be better than the last one, but not as good as the one after that. My last presentation where I spoke to a group was better than the one before that, but you know what? It's not as good as the one I'm doing next Tuesday. Better, faster. Customers want things fast. I'm not going to put you on the spot because nobody can see you, but have you ever paced in front of a microwave oven? A minute for a cup of hot water is way too long. I want a nuclear oven. I want to put my cup in the microwave, hit a button, and see a mushroom cloud. I don't care if it's radioactive. I want it fast. Well, customers are the same way. I called on a Vistage member, actually, here in Atlanta, CEO. I went in her office and did my establishing rapport, which is an important part of the sales call. I went in and said, how's business? She said, fine, why are you here? That was establishing rapport. We kind of bonded there for a millisecond. It was a tender moment. But people are saying, time is precious now. How can I make my next sales call better and at the same time faster and at a lower cost. And in sales, what we're talking about is cost of sales. It's not pure cost of sales, but it's the portion of cost of sales that the salesperson can control. What portion of the sales process can the salesperson actually control the cost? I look at a salesperson's itinerary, and where are you going today? Well, my first call is on the east side of town. My second call is on the west side of town. My third call is on the east side of town. Well, that's pretty obvious. You're not taking advantage of things. When I was selling for AT&T, I was their top salesperson 1 year. When I was selling for AT&T, I would check out a company car, drive 45 minutes to drop off a brochure knowing the customer wasn't going to be there. I didn't understand cost of sales. I once spent $1,600 on slides to sell a $600 key system. I wasn't measured on cost. Now that I run my own company, we watch those numbers pretty closely. So can your salespeople sell better? At the same time, faster, bring the sale to closure faster. What are you doing to shorten your cycle? And then reduce your overall cost, those costs that the salesperson could control.
Great. So, you know, as you think about these processes, are you seeing that adoption of processes is in sales is accelerating, or is it that something that CEOs are craving to put more process into their sales function?
A little of both. I'm seeing an acceleration only because it didn't exist a few years ago. So now we're seeing rapid implementation. It's growing exponentially only because there wasn't a lot before. But your other point is critical. CEOs are looking for it. CSOs, where they exist, chief sales officers, which is an emerging position. The CEO or CSO is looking at, how do I go about doing this? We think if we want to do market expansion, we need to hire some more salespeople. If we want to do line extension, we need to hire some more engineers and then hire some more salespeople. That may or may not be true. If we could Kaizen, better, faster, lower cost, perhaps we could grow vertically or horizontally with our existing sales force and make some pretty significant changes happen. It can be done. What I'm seeing from some of my clients is just absolutely remarkable. I have a client that sells a product that is so close to a commodity, you could go into business competing with them tomorrow with stuff that you buy at Home Depot. And we're talking about some pretty basic stuff here. They gave their sales team an iPad. There's an app on this iPad that reduces a portion of their sales cycle from 3 weeks to 3 minutes. From 3 weeks to 3 minutes. 40% of their business is in disaster recovery. So they sit down with a plant manager, a CEO who's just experienced a loss of some sort, 20% capacity. The other vendor came in and said, we can have you back up and running in 3 weeks. They say, we can have you this portion of the sales cycle done in 3 minutes. Which one are you going to go with?
Right.
And does the cost even matter at that point? Well, the price doesn't. The cost is significantly less because the customer's going to be back up and running. They're not going to miss orders. They're going to be able to make shipments. They're not going to have to do double shipments. They're not going to have to do double invoicing.
Or even just peace of mind, right?
What's it worth to not have to walk the floor trying to figure out how you're going to straighten out this mess? So when we look at technology, process, individuals, all these people coming together, even the most basic businesses are capitalizing on this, and some of the more complex, the more difficult businesses are also capitalizing on this.
Now, are you seeing these trends consistent across the different size of companies? So Vistage has mainly been market companies up to, as Linda Gabbard mentioned earlier this morning, up to $100 million in revenue. Yes. And I know that you serve some companies that are significantly larger than that. You serve some enterprise, Fortune 500 size companies. Are you seeing these trends consistent across these different market segments, or how would these trends differ for, a mid-market company versus an enterprise-sized company?
Okay, here comes the fun part. Vistage,
and Chuck is a very fun guy, if you guys don't know him already.
You didn't bring any donuts, so I'm not going to be fun. Here's the fun part. Mid-market companies, which is the typical Vistage company, There are multi-billion dollar companies in Vistage. If you look at the bell curve, you got 10% at the top, 10% at the bottom. Well, you have some very small companies, you have some very large companies, but that 80% in the middle is mid-market. Not only are they embracing these trends and concepts, they can implement them faster. When I worked for AT&T, it was the largest corpororation in the world, $66 billion in revenue, a million employees. I knew half of them. It's a huge organization. If we wanted to do something, we had to form a committee. My first job in sales, I've been in operations for 10 years. They sent me over to sales, went to a national account. The national account manager says, the rookie plans the annual sales meeting. I said, where's the binder? Because we had a binder for everything. He said, here's the binder. You'll need to form a team. I said, okay, I'll form a team. He said, who's going to be on your team? I said, I don't know. He said, well, you need to have a meeting to decide who's going to be on your team. I said, okay, I'll have a meeting to decide. He said, who's going to come to your meeting? I said, I don't know. He said, you need to have a meeting to decide that. I said, let me see if I got this straight now. We have to have a meeting to plan a meeting to plan a meeting. He said, sounds about right. So it's difficult to implement. It's hard to turn the Queen Mary, but you can turn a cigarette boat and make a huge rooster tail at the same time. So mid-market companies, when they embrace these, have the ability, the typical Vistage member can take these ideas to their Vistage group, bounce them off, they'll refine them at the group meeting, and then they're able to implement them better, faster, and at a lower cost. Did I mention that earlier, by the way? They're able to do this because of the Vistage relationship. Also because they lack many of the constraints that larger companies have. Most Vistage companies are privately held, which means they don't have to satisfy a board of directors. They may have a bank or some influencers or some financiers, but they're primarily in a position to say, okay, we're at one today. We need to be at five tomorrow. We're going to do it, and here's how.
And you mentioned implementation. So, you know, you have your changing demographics, you have your accelerating technology, and you have these processes that are kind of going to be the foundation. What would you recommend for people who are listening? What is the first step in trying to latch on or implement some of these ideas, you know, to the extent that any of them sound interesting?
One word.
What's that?
Tuck. Outcome.
Okay.
What do you want to achieve? And the typical CEO will get sucked into the day-to-day. I've worked with hundreds of them, and they say, you know, I'm getting out of the day-to-day, and then they immediately jump right back into it. It's a tough habit to break, especially when you're the company founder, when you started the company. So the first thing you want to look at is outcome. Not what outcome do you want. Not what outcome do you need, but what outcome is possible? What outcome is feasible? And then add a percentage to that. I'm introducing a new talk for Vistage. It's called A Brief History of the Day After Tomorrow. Because by the time you plan tomorrow, tomorrow's come and gone, now we're on to the next day. Things are happening too rapidly. So for the typical CEO, the business leader, number one, what's happening in your industry? What are your competition? What's your competition up to? What technologies are changing your industry? And it doesn't mean you need to embrace the technology. You just need to be aware of it. What are other people doing? I will either do that better or do something different. Either way, I'll win. But if I'm a Me Too company, my customer doesn't need me. So what's happening in your industry? Number two, what's happening in your market? You look at your customer base. What's happening for your customers? Am I selling to a dinosaur? We've always sold to this company. We've always sold buggy whips to buggy manufacturers. Well, the buggy manufacturers are gone. The automobile is here. So what's happening in my industry? What's happening in my market? And then what's happening in the culture? Now we're back to fast again. Customers want things fast. They want the information now. They don't want to have to wait for a response. They want to know how quickly can we respond to them. So you take those three factors, your industry, your market, and the culture, the demographics, and then you decide what could the outcome be. Once you've put your stake in the ground, you don't compromise. You take a burn the boats mentality. Failure is not an option. We're going to find a way to make this happen. The leader of a company is the corporate visionary. The visionary is the person who understands destination. Destination is the outcome. When you and I get on airplanes, which you and I do frequently, the captain of the airplane understands destination. When they're bringing us home, they understand Atlanta-Hartsfield Airport. That's where they're going to go. What if there's weather? Oh, no, there's some weather up ahead. Let's just land short of Atlanta. They don't do that. They either go under it, over it, around it, or through it. They find a way to push past it. So you set the outcome. Then you start looking at your processes. What's working well? What do we need to change? What's working well? What do we need to change? If something is working well, then you fine-tune it. If something is not working well, you redefine it. So now we have two rules. Fine-tune the familiar, redefine the process. Fine-tune the familiar. Let's keep on doing what we've always done, only do it better, faster, lower cost. Or redefine the process. We have to do things differently now. Here's where business leaders get in trouble. Fred's worked for us for 20 years, and he doesn't fit in anymore. Well, we can't let Fred go. You know, my dad started the business. He was Fred's best friend and all that. So we start getting into personalities. I refer to it as chairs. Everybody sits in a chair, not a physical chair, but a position chair. What happens when the chair outgrows the person in that position? We need to make a change. What happens when the person outgrows the chair? You need to make a change. If you don't, the person's going to realize my talents are not being fully utilized here, and they'll try to find something else. So let's don't get locked into the old paradigms of business or job descriptions. Let's don't get locked into the old way of doing things. Let's start looking at what do we need to change in order to reach that destination. Highly recommend the movie Apollo 13. It's been around for a bazillion years. The two prime best lines in that movie are, "Houston, we have a problem. Every business in America has a problem." And the other one was, "Failure is not an option." Now think about this. We got this capsule spinning around the Earth somewhere in distant orbit that has experienced a catastrophic loss using only the materials and tools available in that capsule. We have to redesign and manufacture the air handling system. I don't know about you, I'd throw my hands up in the air. And if you watch the movie, they did throw their hands up in the air, which is, failure is not an option, became the mantra at that point. Look, if they can do that, can't we figure out a way of doing things differently? We can't get locked into the old paradigms. Always done it this way before, always going to do it this way in the future. If I always do what I've always done,
I'm going to get what I've always gotten.
I'll have less than I've ever had before. See, your response is the typical response. Well, you know, we'll find a way to muddle by. The competition's going to move ahead. Your customer is going to move ahead. Technology is going to move ahead. The idea that you can always do what you've always done, that game is over. We're either moving forward or we're moving backwards.
So you mentioned a lot of strategic considerations, like looking at your competition, benchmarking your competition, looking at what your customers want. I'm a strategist, and I'm wondering, how do you, or do you see your customers using these ideas around demographics and technology and process and putting that into their business plan and strategic thinking?
You're the strategic thinker. I'm a sales guy. Long-term planning for me is lunch. If I get up in the morning, got plans for lunch, I've done some serious planning.
That's actually not true, listeners.
But I know. It's pretty close. What they need to do, and I'm not trying to blow smoke here, is they need to bring in someone like you, a strategic thinker who can get them out of the box. That's what Vistage is all about. Once a month, you got to sit down with a bunch of people who know your business and know you, and if your baby's ugly, they're going to tell you. And if you're off track, they're going to tell you. We all need that. Napoleon Hill referred to it as the mastermind group. Let's surround our people, surround ourselves with people who like us enough, love us enough, respect us enough to say the hard things. And we give them permission. People will ask me a question, and my response will be, "You want the truth, or you want me to gloss it over?" Because I can go either way here. I'm a sales guy, right? And when they say they want the truth, which they always do, they've opened the door to reality. So strategically, we need to start looking at how to go forward. Well, I can't do that by myself. So someone you and I both know, Jansen Chazanoff, he's my strategic thinker. He comes in. He'll say, how's business? I'll say, I don't have a clue. That's why you're here. I want you to tell me how's business. And he will ask me tough questions that I do not want to face. That's what we need. You're not going to move forward by sweeping stuff under the rug. You're not going to move forward by looking in the rearview mirror, the old cliche. So we need to look at, okay, where is this road going? And what is my personal responsibility? What I ask CEOs in my customer servicing training is this. When a customer is dissatisfied, blank made a mistake. What goes in the blank? Personal pronoun, I. As the CEO, either I did something to cause it, or I could have done something to prevent it. Either you're the leader or you aren't. When I blame manufacturing for missing a sales order, when I blame accounting for an invoice issue, it's the wrong thing to do. What will I do differently to change that next time?
Hmm. So, you know, as we're looking forward over the next 5 years, you know, 2015 to 2020, what do you expect are some of the challenges that your CEO clients will face? You know, what are the biggest challenges that you're seeing?
Oh, good. Keep in mind, all I know about business is sales. I don't know engineering, manufacturing. I certainly don't know accounting. I don't do numbers. I'm a sales guy. If you know anything about us salespeople, you know we don't get into that column and row stuff.
Don't believe him, listeners.
Boring.
Chuck will try to dummy up on you. Chuck is not. Chuck is as sharp as a razor.
If a salesperson designed an expense report, how many boxes would it have? Two, name total. This is all you need to know. Okay, so all I can speak to is sales. The pace of change in sales will continue to accelerate. Every company has a chief sales officer, just as every company has a chief financial officer. They may not have the position filled, they may not have an individual, but they do have the function. If you don't have a CFO, who is the CFO? The CEO. And if you don't believe that, ask Bernie Ebbers. What did Bernie Ebbers tell the judge? WorldCom, when it went under, he said, I'm a sales guy. I don't know nothing about no numbers. What did the judge tell Bernie Ebbers?
Don't know.
You'll have some time, take some courses. So he spent some time in. Okay. So all I know about business is sales. You need someone to function as your chief sales officer. This is not retitling your VP of sales. It is a strategic sales position. When you look at your CFO or your COO or your CIO, they're not thinking about today. They're not figuring out how do we pay the bills today. They're looking long term. So you need someone in your organization who can pick up the vision from the CEO, the corporate visionary, and start developing the strategies, not the tactics and not the tasks, the strategies for moving the sales organization towards that objective that you asked about earlier. This is where we're trying to go. The sales leader has to figure that out. Okay, what market shifts are coming? Your VP of sales probably doesn't have time to do that, and certainly your sales manager doesn't have time to do that, and your salesperson doesn't have the wherewithal to do that. Don't have the experience, don't have the training, and besides, we want them to sell something today. So going forward, start developing a strategy for your sales. And if you look at most sales strategic plans, they're not strategic plans. They are tactical plans. Big difference.
And, you know, is that chief sales officer position, do you think that that's relevant even for middle market companies?
Especially relevant for middle market companies. UPS has one, Salesforce.com has one, HP has one, of course. But on my website, I've got a chief sales officer library, a whole bunch of white papers you can read and figure out, here's what a CSO is versus a VP of sales, and here's how you go about structuring that. How do we compensate our salespeople? Annual compensation programs are ridiculous. Think about it. We tell our salespeople at the end of the year, here's how you're going to be paid next year. Assuming nothing's going to change. Everything is going to change. Industry, market, technology, processes, everything's going to change. So now what we're looking at is rolling six-month compensation plans. That's a strategy. So how will we be doing things this time next year? Wow, I don't have a clue. and this is all I do for a living, and I don't have a clue what's going to be going on this time next year. Your CSO does the same things that any other C-level would do. They read the trade journals. They network with other people like them. They keep up with what's going on in their particular area of the business. What processes are changing? What technologies are available? And do we embrace those? And if we embrace those, how do we embrace them? So you need someone who's out of the day-to-day and focusing strategically on where sales is going. In a mid-market company, typically the CEO is also the CSO. So what is the CEO doing on at least a weekly basis to look at where our business industry market is going, and how do we intend to embrace that? How will we chase after that?
And so are you thinking that they need to actually bring somebody into that role? Would they do it on a fractional basis? What's the kind of dollar investment that you think is required to actually implement that role?
When you mention the fractional basis, some people are unaware that you can have a part-time CFO. There are numerous organizations, even here in the Atlanta area, where they will function as your CFO. Not your accounting firm, not your bookkeeper. They will function as your chief financial officer on a part-time basis. They'll come in half a day a week or a full day a week. Look at the same thing on the sales side of the house. Unfortunately, there aren't any of those. There are very few of those. So what I recommend for a mid-market company, find a retired VP of sales for a company that was larger than you intend to be. Someone who has already gone where you're trying to go and maybe even further, then they can come in on a part-time basis. People don't retire anymore. What am I going to do, play tennis 8 hours a day? I don't think so. So I look at it and say, there are these people out there, they would love the opportunity to work for someone, work with someone, get some mental energy going again, get some of the thrill of the hunt going again, celebrate the wins again. And if it doesn't take away from their travel, which they would like to do, or their golf game or whatever, they'll be there for you. Once a company reaches a point where they can staff that position is paid on par with the other C-levels, your CFO or your CIO. If you have to decide, will I hire a CFO or a CSO, you have to call that shot. Which is better for you, managing your existing dollars or creating more dollars? And there's no one answer to that. As a sales guy, it's always create more dollars. But maybe there's something that could be done on the financial side that would finance the CSO position.
Great, great, great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Chuck.
Thanks for the invitation. Next time, bring donuts.
Awesome. Have a great rest of the afternoon.
Thanks, you too.
This show is brought to you by Annona Enterprises, where strategy is your access to money and performance. Learn more at annonaenterprises.com.